aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee kurup, guten tak, jiao weevi va kat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan. Peace how? Go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget Pharmaceutical Kill, Vivisection Prison, Killitary Industrial Poor Nation. In the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster-bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, food-born in the NRA, USA, home of Uncle Sam, Manila, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, back on the air after taking off last week to MC the wonderful vegan event organized by the San Francisco Vegetarian Society at Golden Gate Park, and where I presented the most important environmental talk ever delivered. Well, at least certainly more important than any speech ever made by the dude considered the number one environmentalist in America, Fibbin Bill McKibben, who personally engages in humans' most destructive environmental behavior, consumption of animals, cadavers, and secretions. And as much as environmental opportunist, Fibbin Bill McKibben, wants us to believe that we can save the planet by singing songs about divestment in oil companies or, you know, the big bad XL pipeline, which actually in the equation is an insignificant environmental threat compared to the meat that McKibben eats. McKibben is not an environmental scientist. The world's top environmental scientists, employed by the World Bank, tell us that animal agriculture is the number one cause of climate change, responsible for at least 51% of all human-caused greenhouse gas emissions. Those same scientists tell us that the only way that we can stop climate change in time is a 50 to 85% conversion from consumption of so-called animal products to vegan foods by 2020, after which it is too late and polar ice will melt and 1,700 U.S. cities will face submersion. I think each of those 1,700 cities should be submerged in campaigns, you know, to make those cities vegan by 2020, you know, like a vegan San Francisco by 2020, a vegan New York by 2020, you know, that little island there, Manhattan, a vegan Miami by 2020. Yeah, that's going to be one of the cities submerged if we don't get it together and go vegan in time. A vegan L.A. by 2020. Yeah, most of California, you know, a vegan Sacramento by 2020. Most of California would be under the threat of submersion. A vegan Boston by 2020 needs to be that. It doesn't mean we'll be submerged by 2021, but, you know, we will set the polar ice melting so that, you know, all the geniuses at MIT and Harvard will, you know, have to figure out a way of taking their classes underwater, I think, by, you know, 2050-ish, you know? So, I mean, are we all going to join the Atlantises of the world, or do we go vegan? But Fibbin McKibben will just eat a cow, blame the Vatican for having stock in the oil industry, and scare us about what the XL pipeline will do in the future. And it's not as much as Bill McKibben's destructive dietary choices. I mean, he's so against fossil fuels, but he should be against fossil foods. Yes, fossil foods, the meat, dairy, fish, and eggs are so out of fashion, so 20th century, you know. So we got to dump those fossil foods. Energy Trends Insight reports that the maximum volume of the Keystone XL pipeline would be 830,000 barrels per day. The impact on climate change, less than 1/10,000th of a degree Celsius per year. The entire oil reserve in Alberta, the part that is economically viable to extract, 170 billion barrels of oil on the wall, 170 billion barrels of oil if one of those barrels should happen to fall. So burning the entire reserve would lead to a global temperature rise. That is, burning 170 billion barrels would lead to a global temperature rise of only 0.02 to 0.05 degrees Celsius. That's between 1/50th and 1/20th of a degree Celsius. So the XL pipeline is irrelevant. Stopping it won't stop climate change. Stopping consumption of meat, dairy, fish, and eggs will. So, I mean, it's a nice hobby, if you want to work to stop the pipeline, but why do that when you can work to help people go vegan and stop fossil foods, which really needs to happen. So, in the study, Livestock and Climate Change by Robert Goodland and Jeff Anhang, the estimate is that if all land used for grazing so-called livestock and for growing food for so-called livestock instead were converted to growing crops, that would be consumed more directly by humans, instead were converted to growing crops for vegan food for humans and for biofuels, those fuels could replace 1/2 of the coal used worldwide. That should make Fibb and McKibben happy, right? Which is responsible for about 3,340 million tons of CO2 emissions annually. Did you get that? So what that means is if we took all the land where so-called cattle grazing and the land growing feed for cattle, if we converted that into land that would grow food directly for people, that would leave enough land to grow biofuels that could replace 1/2 of the coal used worldwide. Anyway, you can see my talk at last week's festival, Why Going Vegan is the Only Way to Stop Climate Change and Environmental Destruction. It's available at sfvs.org. I've also posted links on my Bob Linden Facebook pages and the Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden Facebook page and Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. Who's going to be the 10,000th follower on Twitter of at Go Vegan Radio? I think we're at 9,977 today. So just 23 more people needed to stalk me on Twitter and satisfy my egomaniacal appetite for popularity. So, please be my friend. It's all about me. Be my friend on Facebook, or like Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and help keep this show going. I've been doing this now for 13 years. I posted my environmental talk, on Twitter and Facebook, and it's all pretty scary stuff. If we don't do that massive shift to veganism by 2020, very scary, huh? And the Pentagon thinks it's scary, too. National Resources Defense Council wrote about the Pentagon seeing climate change as an immediate security risk. The Pentagon, yes. The Department of Defense released its 2014 climate change adaption roadmap this past Monday. And the Pentagon is taking things pretty seriously here, outlining how the U.S. military plans to adapt to the impacts of climate change. For the first time, the Pentagon discusses climate change as an immediate risk, a factor that should be incorporated into how the military operates today, not just related to future decisions. The report announced that a meeting of top defense officials in Peru highlights just how central climate change is to the military's core mission. That core mission is, hey, we got to kill people, and it's inconvenient if there's a drought, you know, or a flood. You know, like, just let us do our core mission and kill people. The military's clear. I'm looking at what's written in the NRDC report here, the NRDC, which also, you know, climate change deniers, if they deny animal agriculture, they're basically climate change deniers like NRDC. So it says the military's clear-eyed perspective on climate change contrasts sharply with the denial, ducking, and dodging that marks the stance of some members of Congress who seem to think the issue will disappear if they continue to ignore it. Here it says, according to the Pentagon report, ecological upheavals that lead to drought and disruptions of food, water, and power supplies can undermine fragile governments, creating an avenue for extremist ideologies and conditions that foster terrorism. So, there you have it. Also says here, as I've mentioned on this program, some experts believe that climate change is at work in Syria, where drought may have helped trigger an exodus of farmers from the countryside to the cities, straining infrastructure and exposing displaced and disaffected young people to extremism. So the New York Times reported that ISIS is seizing control of scarce water supplies to help solidify its power in the region. Water. Yes, water. You know, like a vegan needs 10,000 gallons of water to grow his or her food in a year. And a meat eater needs 320,000 gallons. But here it is. Animal agriculture, your appetite for meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. There you see it. The Pentagon is telling us it leads to terrorism, extremism, governments being toppled. Huh? So, pretty scary, huh? Go vegan by 2020. Coming up on today's program, organizers of Vegan Soul Fest, which is happening in Baltimore on Saturday. Nadja Wright from the Land of Kush Vegan Restaurant and Brenda Sanders from Better Health, Better Life and the Vegan Living Program. Also, Dr. Ruby Lathan, who will be speaking at the event. And next hour, Professor Gary Francione. Commentary on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter at GoVeganRadio and Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Please like that page. And also we have a Facebook page for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And we have its own webpage, WorldVeganSummit.com. And before the break, was talking about how, basically, if animal agriculture is the cause of climate change, and it is, since it's responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions, and now the Pentagon tells us that climate change will lead to governments toppling and more extremism and terrorism. So, therefore, what the equation is, your appetite for meat, dairy, fish, and eggs will be causing that extremism and terrorism. It's kind of scary, huh? And I know we can only panic about one thing at a time. I know we have the Al-Qaeda and ISIS, and now we have to panic about Ebola for a while. I mean, and it is. It's about time we panicked over a meat-eating disease, right? I mean, you don't see Obama convening, you know, panels of experts to address the meat-eating diseases that kill millions and millions of Americans year after year, from heart disease and cancer, stroke, diabetes, millions dead. But when one or two or three people die from the meat-eating disease of Ebola, then it's panic everywhere. And yes, It is the human consumption of animals in Africa called bushmeat that has brought us to where we are today, hunting for wild animals. And, what a potent contamination it is, isn't it? I mean, you think like, wow, you have to stay away from the bodily fluids of someone who, is contaminated by the disease. I mean, that means like, you know, you have to look out for, vomit and feces and saliva and mucus and tears and sweat and urine and milk and semen and, we sure are kind of a disgusting little factory, aren't we? And, you know, when you consider the salmonellas of the world, the E. coli, always, always it is the meat, dairy, fish, and eggs responsible for it. You know, I don't know why you would expect, life and good health to come from death, and diseased bodies and filth and, I don't know how you find it appetizing either, other than ketchup really helps. But obviously, we have to put an end to this horrible habit of this aberrant human behavior of consuming meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. And let's get together and strategize on how to do that. We're gathering for the World Vegan Summit and Expo, March 20, 21, and 22 of 2015. In the Los Angeles area at the Marina del Rey Marriott. You can register right now. Go to worldvegansummit.com. I'm just thinking of some of the amazing topics that will be discussed at this three-day event. We'll have animals in the history of Western thought. We will have presentations on veganic gardening and agriculture, taking organic, a step above in the sense that no animal products are used in the growing at all. What else? We'll have questions that people ask vegans. Remember, we had Sherry Kolb on this program some months back with Mind If I Order the Cheeseburger? Well, she'll be there, and we'll be addressing some of those questions. We have many people from the academic world there, Professor Sherry Kolb, her husband Michael Dorf, Professor Dorf, so we are planning Le Jugement, my French pronunciation of the film by Maxime Ginolin. I will practice my French. We'll have that screening during the Friday evening reception. Then, we're going to have a breakfast of champions with great vegan athletes Saturday morning. I'll do a welcome. We'll talk about Donald Watson and veganism. We'll have vegan workshops, defining the abolitionist approach with Gary Francione. Anyway, register now, worldvegansummit.com, worldvegansummit.com. We need you there. We have to get the world to go vegan. Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. That sounded a little like Jazzy 100, the radio station that I used to program in Washington, D.C. If any of my old friends back from those days listen here, I want you to know there's a great event happening this coming Saturday. You can head on over to Baltimore for the first annual Vegan Soul Fest. It's this Saturday, and I have the organizers of the event on today's program. Nadja Wright, who is the co-owner of the Land of Kush vegan restaurant in Baltimore's Mount Vernon neighborhood. And also Brenda Sanders, Executive Director of the Better Health, Better Life Organization, co-director of the Open Cages Alliance, and organizer of the Vegan Living Program. Welcome, Nadja. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having us, Bob.
Thank you for being here. And hi, Brenda. How are you?
Hey there, Bob. It's great to be here.
It's thank you for being with us today. You are really 21st century heroes. You know, I think that it's great that I think it's great that with organizing Vegan Soul Fest, it really brings recognition that vegan is the true 21st century soul.
And you know,
we need to say it loud. I'm vegan and I'm say it loud. I'm vegan and I'm proud. Vegan soul food, right? Okay, so how did this idea for Vegan Soul Fest come together?
Well, it was shortly after the most recent Vegan Living Program, which is a vegan education program organized by Open the Cages Alliance, an animal rights organization in Baltimore. And I was at the Land of Kush, and Nadja and I got talking. And we were talking about a lot of the problems that people in Baltimore are facing, and really all over the country, you know, with like health disparities and you know,
obesity,
the way of the
cancer,
environment,
yeah, heart disease, stroke,
right, and so we were just throwing around ideas, and I don't know who came up with the idea first to do a festival, but it was a great idea. We immediately kind of latched onto it and started talking about how we could make it happen. So,
Well, and I think it's great that you used...
Brenda was working on the VLP, she did talk about a conference. Remember, Brenda, you really weren't sure what it was going to be yet. And then after she finished up with the VLP program, she said, Nadja, I'm ready. I'm available. If you're looking to do anything. And I was like, you know what? We need a vegan festival in Baltimore. Let's do it.
Right.
That's great. And it's great that you use the word vegan, you know, so that it really, you know, says what it is and what it needs to be. And, so tell us a little bit, though, about your restaurant in Baltimore, then, the Land of Kush.
The Land of Kush is actually the birth child of my fiancé, Gregory Brown. He started... What happened was... there was a festival in 2004 called Jazzy Summer Nights, and they were looking for some vegan chefs to come out and cook for the crowd. So Greg knew a couple of chefs that own restaurants, but they all said, hey, there's no market in Baltimore, and it's a waste of time. So Greg was very bold and said, hey, you know, I'm going to do this myself. So he went out. He couldn't cook for more than two people, but he cooked for that festival, and he ran out of food in 1 hour. Then what happened... The light bulb went off, and he was like, you know, hey, there is a market out here for vegan food, and I'm going to go after it. So he had to recoup some funds over the years. So in 2007, he got a job at, 2005, he got a job at Verizon Wireless, which where I happened to work, and that's how we met. And at some point, we kind of got together and you know, started dating, and he was telling me his ideas, and I said, you know what, I used to be in New York promoting events, things like that, let me help you out. Now we have the Land of Kush, a storefront. Before we got the storefront, we was just doing festivals. We started out with the African American Heritage Festival. We did that festival because we knew, or we felt it would be a challenge to bring vegan food, you know, out to the festival, but surprisingly, we sold out 3 days in a row, and then we did it the following year, and sold out again, and then Artscape reached out to us and wanted us to cook in their green section, and at that point, everybody started asking, where is your location? So we knew we had to open up a location, so after looking at different spots in Fells Point, Federal Hill, and a couple other areas in Baltimore, we landed at 840 North Utah Street in Baltimore, and, you know, we've been doing well. It's going to be 4 years in January.
Oh, 4 years. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's
we
it's
had celebrities here. Stevie Wonder was here in April for 2 days in a row. We have politicians that come through, actors, you know, people from all walks of life. So it's a really, really, really good time here at the Land of Kush.
Oh, terrific. It's landofkush.com. And I see it's a great menu you have there with entrees and salads and wraps and sides and weekend specials, desserts and smoothies, and you do catering. And I guess for people who say, I just can't give up chicken and ribs, you have vegan chicken and rib dishes and lentil burgers and all. It looks really delicious. So,
oh, yeah. The lentil burgers with the mushroom gravy. That is my favorite. Over to my vegetable medley.
Okay. And then, Nadja, so how did you become interested in veganism or being vegan?
When I came down to Maryland in 2005, I had a physical done on me, and my cholesterol was borderline where I was going to be prescribed meds. And I don't do meds, so I'm holistic, and I follow holistic and homeopathic remedies, so of course that wasn't going to work for me. So I had to find a way of changing my diet. So you're talking about somebody that was big on pizza and milk and, you know, baked mac and cheese, and it's just crazy, just a crazy diet. So I had to cut out the milk, anything that was high in cholesterol. So I was eating egg whites. Because the yolk is all the cholesterol in the yolk. So anything that was like high fat, high cholesterol, I had to cut out. But during that time, like I said, I had met Greg, and I started learning more and more and more about the vegan diet because he was vegan. Mm-hmm. And then I transitioned, you know, after a year or so into a full-fledged vegan. So I understand the transition that some people go through where, okay, I'm going to cut out this, I'm going to cut out that, and I'll come out, cut out that, and then, you know, now I'm vegan.
But they're really not sacrificing anything because the food is so good. As you know, the reaction that you get at the Land of Kush, and Brenda Sanders, how is it that you've become interested in veganism? And it looks like your path also includes concern for animals. And so, what got you going?
Yeah, so I'm a veteran vegan. I've been vegan for 18
years. Keep
schooling
me.
18 years, congratulations.
Thank you. Just had my veganiversary in June.
Veganiversary, I like it. I've had 30 of them myself, so you know you can live at least that long as a vegan.
Wow, so. That is awesome. And you didn't keel over from protein deficiency.
Yeah, who's crawling through the streets? I don't see any vegans crawling through the streets. Protein. Yeah. But a lot of people are in the hospital. A lot of people are in the hospital because they've gotten animal protein and so much of it, which is carcinogenic, which, you know, is tied to heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, you know, I mean, the very things that you're facing, especially, you know, in the African American community, you know, where such conditions are rampant. So, but I interrupted.
There's a lot of communities going through that. There's plenty of communities that's not, you know, this country in general is having an issue with health disparities. When you go to other countries, you don't really see issues that you see here, you know, health care and how people are taking care of themselves, how they're overeating to solve for whether it's mental illness or social ills, you know, comforting, things like that.
Yes, definitely an issue. So I think that I was eating a vegan diet for years before I started to look at some of the other issues. So, for instance, I was eating a vegan, 100% vegan diet, but I still went to the zoo, and I had this experience at the zoo in the primate house that, like, changed everything for me. And I kind of freaked out, and I won't mention which zoo it was, but I'm not welcome there. And that got me thinking about, because I started making connections. You know, when I looked into that glass.
So you went vegan for health then?
Yeah, I went vegan initially for health. And, you know, when I started making those connections between myself and these other beings that we share the planet with, it just
everything just started to make sense. And so it was just something that I couldn't, I'm a person, I'm a doer. So I couldn't just know this information and do nothing. Hmm. So about 2 years ago, I started actively seeking out an organization where I could put my passion into action. And I found Open the Cages Alliance, that is all about, this is how to go vegan now. We'll help you, we'll support you, you know, but you can go vegan now.
Yeah,
which I really love that message.
Me too. I mean, like, why, you know, why put off, you know, and I think a lot of people get stuck on a word vegetarian too, and then assume,
right,
well, I'm doing something by still consuming dairy and eggs, but,
right,
you know, that's that's not quite there. You know, you still have,
no,
the health issues, the animal suffering, the environmental devastation. So what have you been doing in the community of Baltimore then to educate people about veganism?
Well, I was, through Better Health, Better Life, I was doing, and through the health department, I teamed up with the health department of Baltimore City, and I was going around into low-income neighborhoods in Baltimore and just doing these workshops. And the workshop was called Eating for Life. And,
okay,
and
whoops,
so I was,
we have to
know,
take a break. I hear the music, so we'll continue with Brenda Sanders and Nadja Wright. Ruby Lathan coming up on the program, too. She's speaking at Vegan Soul Fest on Saturday. Professor Gary Francione next hour on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. On Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio. And you know you want to go vegan, right? For the animals, your health, the environment. But you keep making up excuses like, well, I'm not near a great restaurant like Land of Kush in Baltimore. Or, you know, I want vegan soul food, but I'm not near Solely Vegan in Oakland or Stuff I Eat in Inglewood. Well, no excuse. You can have great vegan meals delivered right to your door wherever you are in the USA from Green Light Meals. That's Green, L-I-T-E, meals.com. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, smoothies, snacks, desserts, foods the kids will love. Check it out at greenlightmeals.com, and you have nutrition and weight loss consultation with Melissa Bray. And you can say hi to the folks from Green Light Meals at the World Vegan Summit in March at the Marina Del Rey Marriott, March 20 through 22nd. And and by the way, we will have one of the talks there will be the Saturday lunch on supporting your local vegan restaurant and local vegan businesses. And you should support Land of Kush if you're in the Baltimore area. Go on in. You know, don't go to one of these, you know, meat restaurants that seems to have some, you know, vegan option when you can support the people who are really doing heroic work, like bringing you the food, you know, which is really so important. That's like a rescue mission in a sense. And I want to point out that we will have Soul Food for Thought at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, the Saturday night dinner show with Dr. Antenna Roba from Ethiopia and Dr. Milton Mills, that's Outreach to People of Color. Dr. Mills will be speaking at the Vegan Soul Fest in Baltimore on Saturday, and we're talking to Nadja Wright and Brenda Sanders, who are organizing that event. Brenda, before the break, you were just mentioning that you were doing vegan education in low-income areas of Baltimore. Was I?
And that was an awesome program through Better Health, Better Life and the Health Department here in Baltimore. But then when I came across Open the Cages Alliance and the Vegan Living Program that they do every year, I guess that we do every year, I needed to be involved in that because it kind of it covered everything. You know, it covered the health, of course, and like cooking and how to make the food. But there's also a trip to an animal sanctuary, and you know, there's lectures, and actually Dr. Ruby came out and did a nutrition lecture at the 2014 Vegan Living Program. And so now I really want to focus on organizing the Vegan Living Program and making it bigger. I mean, we were trying to get 30 people. It was like 30 people, 30 days, you know, change your life. We got 150 people in 2014. Ah. In Baltimore.
Yeah, that was awesome,
well,
Brenda.
It's
collaborating with people in the community, because she came to the land of Kush and she was like, you know, we need to get the word out. You all help. And I'm like, absolutely. As a vegan restaurant, why not? And then they got all these people, and then they were looking for coaches, and they came back, and I'm like, I got a toddler. You know what? Sign me up
great.
As a coach. And
that's
I just
great.
Had such a great experience coaching the pledges in that program that now I'm out promoting it and making sure that people are aware that every year this program is going on, and you need to be involved with this program, the Vegan Living Program.
You're such heroes in the community. Brenda, how do people contact you and get involved with this?
Oh, wow, there's so much going on. So if they want to get involved with just becoming a part of this huge, beautiful vegan network that we're building here in Baltimore, I can be reached at Brenda at BHBL for Better Health, Better Life, BHBLnow.org. And that is a really quick way to reach me. I can also be reached at Brenda at vegansoulfest.com.
Okay. All right. And so. Vegan Soulfest is coming up Saturday. Nadja, tell us a bit about Vegan Soulfest. What's happening there? Who's there? What's happening?
Well, you already mentioned Ruby Lathan and Dr. Ruby Lathan and Dr. Milton Mills. We also have four.
Wait, hold that
demos.
Thought. Hold that thought. We need to take a break, and then we'll also be joined by Ruby Lathan after the break, and we'll hear more about what's happening Saturday at Vegan Soulfest in Baltimore. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. You can support the program with a tax deductible donation at goveganradio.com. Greetings once again. Welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. I signed another contract with the network this week to continue doing this program till further notice. I obviously haven't offended management enough yet to put us in jeopardy. So we keep on keeping on. Amazingly, we were on the Air America Radio Network, CBS and Clear Channel radio stations. I thought, you know, we'd be allowed to be on the air, you know, maybe for 2 weeks, you know, before they realize we're insulting all the other advertisers and all the meat companies and the slash food restaurants and the pharmaceuticals. But I guess nobody's listened yet. And we thank Nature's Flavors for support of the program and the World Vegan Summit and Expo. We'll be serving Select, S-E-E-L-E-C-T, Select Organic Coffee and Tea at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Nature'sFlavors.com, a 100% vegan company. Thousands of products, including Bertie and Bill sodas and baking mixes. You want vegan, sugar-free, gluten-free chocolate brownies? You get them from Select, Nature's Flavors, available at Viva La Vegan Grocery in Rancho Cucamonga and in Santa Monica. They'll be at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. You can register right now, worldvegansummit.com. They'll be on that panel related to supporting your local vegan businesses, Viva La Vegan Grocery. Also, Vegans will be there, the grocery vegan grocery chain in Europe, and Loving Hut. And Mike Weinberg will be there from Vegan Diego, and support your local vegan restaurant in Baltimore, the land of Kush. Nadja Wright is one of the she's co-owner of the restaurant, and she and Brenda Sanders are organizing the Vegan Soul Fest that's in Baltimore this Saturday from noon to 5. And before we bring on one of the speakers at that event, Nadja, you were just summarizing exactly what's happening, like who, what, where, when, why, who the speakers are, and what's happening, and then we'll bring on one of the speakers. And
all right. Well, Dr. Ruby Lathan is going to be speaking on the plant-based nutrition. Dr. Milton Mills is going to be giving a lecture on the human anatomy and the plant-based diet. We also have it's two levels indoors. So on the main stage is Dr. Ruby Lathan and Dr. Milton Mills. On the second level, we're going to have four cooking demos scheduled. So a cooking demo by Chef Luce, how to cook for vegan kids. How to cook vegan foods for your kids. Antoinette St. Clair is going to do a raw foods demo. We also have, of course, a vegan comfort food demonstration by Chef Greg Brown from the Land of Kush. And you won't believe it's vegan demonstration by Chef Bay. We also have celebrity chef Ayinde Howell, who is coming in to do a demo. He's cooked for celebrity musicians. And we have children's activities provided by Enseroma Academy. It's a holistic academy. They promote veganism. And then we have 70 vendors that will be outdoors. So it's going to be a great time. And
terrific.
A live DJ who's also vegan.
Great. And the website and Facebook are?
VeganSoulFest.com and on Facebook, Vegan Soul Fest. And Twitter at Vegan Soul Fest.
Terrific. Okay. And as we've mentioned, one of the speakers there is Dr. Ruby Lathan, who is a certified holistic nutrition and wellness consultant who conducts seminars and workshops and cooking demonstrations herself. She also hosts the Veggie Chest on foodchannel.com, is a contributing writer to the African American Lifestyle magazine. She spoke on the Congressional Black Caucus panel on the subject In Pursuit of a Healthier Black America, and Dr. Lathan has also served as Nutrition Policy Manager for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And welcome, Dr. Lathan. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being with us. Now, you actually had a career going in engineering and took a detour. I wonder what got you interested in the vegan lifestyle and the career path you've taken now?
Well, sure. I was diagnosed with cancer, and as you know, for a lot of people, that changes everything. And that was certainly the case with me, because I really believed there was a natural way to approach it. And so I started studying on what that should be, what that looked like, and just really delved into it. And time after time, everything I read pointed toward a plant-based diet, a whole food, natural plant-based diet. And that's what I did. I switched to that. And just over a year later, my cancer was gone with nothing but changing what I ate. And so that did it for me, and everyone wanted to know how I did it. And so I started teaching people and just made it my new career.
Mm-hmm. And so within a year, your problem with thyroid cancer was overcome by going vegan. What were some of the foods you were eating? What do you think really helped you in that?
Well, I was eating a lot of processed food, a lot of dairy products.
Oh, this is what got you to the cancer, is what you're
right.
Saying. Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's what I was eating before.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I switched, you know, it went to more just, you know, foods that are closest to their natural form as possible. And that's where the life of the food is, lots of raw food, lots of, you know, just real live food, lots of juicing, lots of smoothies, things like that. And then, you know, my initial, you know, thought was, what am I going to eat now if I'm not eating you know, processed foods, what am I going to eat for protein? And, you know, I realized that there's so much protein in so many foods, in every food, actually. All plants, all fruits and vegetables have protein. But just leaning more toward your beans, your nuts, your seeds, your whole grains. When you eat real food, you get what you need. It's when you're eating processed food that you really have to worry about being nutrient deficient.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, people still think that dairy is healthy. It's, unfortunately, the Quaker Oats man just got a milk, well, I call it a milk pustache, but the Quaker Oats man, you know, this marketing and, you know, I mean, dairy, you know,
it's terrible.
Is a carcinogen.
It's absolutely. And I thought it was healthy, too. I mean, I used to eat yogurt, like, pretty much every day. Thinking that it was a really healthy source of calcium and nutrients and probiotics and all of that, when that's really not the case. And so there are so many other things, you know, that have calcium, like kale and collards and all the, especially the deep, dark, leafy greens that are full of all of those things without the hormones and the toxins and all of the things that are in dairy that cause inflammation in the body.
Mm. So that's an interesting path. I mean, you really had your own personal issue, and then you went vegan and cured yourself. And then basically, how does that lead you to serving as nutrition policy manager for Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine? And what were you doing with that organization then?
Right. Well, you know,
a good jump.
It was a big jump. It was a huge jump. And I had decided, you know, I wanted to do something other than engineering. It wasn't my passion. I was very good at it, won many awards, but it wasn't my passion. And so I ran across PCRM and saw this position, and I was reading the requirements, and I was like, I can do that. I was like, I'm getting this job. I would do this job for free. And I was just relentless in the pursuit of that. And they really, you know, liked what I had to offer. My knowledge of plant-based nutrition surpasses most people. So I was able to, you know, make that leap as the nutrition policy manager, you know, based on my passion and just background. Because the year that I took off from engineering to heal my body, I wasn't working. I was doing nothing but studying because I was determined to find a natural approach to do this. And so during that time, you know, I learned a tremendous amount and was able to parlay that into the job as nutrition policy manager, which part of that was promoting plant-based diets for the National School Lunch Program, which is really critical because of, we've seen school lunches lately. They're not that good and healthy.
In fact, dairy seems to be a requirement, isn't it? There seems to be cheese and milk everywhere, right?
There is. Milk is a requirement. And we've been able to, you know, get soy milk and things as an alternative because so many kids are lactose intolerant as well. So it is an unfortunate requirement there. And we just started a national campaign really to, you know, improve and implement more plant-based products in the school lunch program, meaning that they're there as options for kids to actually choose to have something other than the processed hot dogs and sausages and the, you know, the fake food that they're eating every day, that at least they would have some options other than that. And so we were able to, you know, work with a lot of local schools who actually, in their cafeteria, introduced plant-based foods, and the kids, we showed them how to do it. We gave them great recipes that were kid-tested, so we knew the kids would like it, and help promote that. And every time we were able to do that, the kids definitely gravitated toward those foods, loved them.
What were some of the vegan foods that the kids liked especially? Do you remember?
Sure. We did a lot of... there were things like pita pockets with falafel. There were, we did tater tots with sweet potatoes, things like that to make it a lot healthier. We did like Santa Fe bowls with beans, black beans, and tomatoes and lettuce and things like that. Bean burritos, all of those things, you know, the kids liked. Definitely some of the meat substitutes, the chicken and things like that. The faux meats were definitely well received as well. So everything that we did, they really loved the tempeh sloppy joes. So there were a lot of foods that they hadn't had before, but we introduced it, let them know that it was coming, what it is, and that it was good for you, and they gravitated toward it. So it just shows that when kids are given a choice, they want to eat healthy, and they'll do it happily.
And it tastes good. We'll continue after the break with Dr. Ruby Lathan and Nadja Wright and Brenda Sanders organizing Vegan Soul Fest coming up Saturday in Baltimore. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Please register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo, worldvegansummit.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Today we are celebrating Vegan Soul Fest coming up this Saturday in Baltimore from noon to 5. We've been talking to the organizers, Nadja Wright and Brenda Sanders and Ruby Lathan, who is speaking there. Dr. Milton Mills will be speaking there. He's been a frequent guest on this radio program. And Dr. Mills will be speaking at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, the Saturday night dinner, which is Soul Food for Thought, similar to the stage presentation we did in San Francisco. And Dr. Mills, I mean, tells it like it is. I mean, he talks about today's African-American diet as plantation food and talks about the more traditional diets of Africa. He talks about the racial bias of USDA guidelines. I mean, there's, it's really serious health issues. And so you can register for the World Vegan Summit by going to worldvegansummit.com. You can register there right now. Don't have to wait till then to see Dr. Mills. He'll be in Baltimore Saturday at Vegan Soul Fest, as will be Dr. Ruby Lathan, with whom we have been speaking on this program. She said that she was going along, eating dairy and processed foods and came down with thyroid cancer, healed herself by going vegan, and so into it that she found herself even speaking, on the Congressional Black Caucus panel in pursuit of a healthier Black America. What did you talk about there, Dr. Lathan?
I talked about, how to address, health issues at the core, because a lot of times we talk a lot about, cures and things like that, and I was like, the cure is on your plate. And it's a lot simpler than we think. There are a lot of issues that go into health disparities, but there's also a simple solution, and that we just don't realize that it's right there, and it doesn't have to be expensive, and it doesn't have to be complicated, and it doesn't have to be a difficult process if we just have the right information. So really talked about, how plant-based nutrition plays into solving these issues, health issues and health disparities in the African-American community.
Mm. It works. It works. So terrific.
Absolutely.
So you'll be at Vegan Soul Fest on Saturday. And how can people reach you or contact you?
Sure. They can reach me at my website at rubylathan.com. And that's RubyLathon. And they can email me at info@rubylathan.com. And there's a lot of information there if you're trying to transition to a plant-based diet. One of the reasons I started the cooking show was to give people a hands-on kind of in-home cooking class that they could do it themselves and see that it's not that complicated and it's not difficult, and you can have healthy food that tastes good. So a lot of that information is on the website.
Yeah, vegans are foodies. We love food.
Absolutely.
I realize
that as I was adopted into the vegan community, that we do love food and lots of it, but it's good. It's good, healthy food. You know, I grew up in Alabama, and I like flavor. I like lots of rich flavor. And I just found myself taking my mom's recipes and veganizing them because I liked what it was, but I didn't want the bad stuff in there. And then, you know, I give them back to her, and now she's making them, you know, in a healthier way. And so we can, you know, take that, those foods that we love, and veganize them and make them taste good and good for ourselves and our heart as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Okay, well, thanks for being with us today, and folks can look forward to seeing you at Vegan Soul Fest on Saturday. I don't know, maybe we have a minute or two left, and I just wanted to see if Nadja or Brenda wanted to jump in and anything you wanted to mention quickly.
I just want to plug it again. Vegan Soul Fest, Saturday, October 25th from 12 to 5 at the Downtown Cultural Arts Center, 401 North Howard Street. So that's Howard and Mulberry. We'll be indoors and outdoors. So we have surrounded the entire block with vendors, and we look forward to seeing Ruby Layton and Dr. Mills and all the wonderful chefs that will be doing demos for us and the live vegan DJ. And we're going to have a fun time educating ourselves about veganism and the importance of it.
Okay, well, thanks for being with us today. Nadja Wright, Brenda Sanders, and Ruby Lathan all will be at Vegan Soul Fest Saturday in Baltimore. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. You can donate to support the program at goveganradio.com and register right now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo at worldvegansummit.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com and on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. Please, we only need 23 people to hit 10,000 Twitter followers, and that would feed my egomaniacal appetite for popularity. So maybe it will be you. Facebook, it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And our thanks to Vegetarian House Vegan Restaurant for its support for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. If you are in the San Francisco Bay Area, San Jose area, you are so lucky to have a restaurant with a menu like you can see at vegetarianhouse.us. 520 East Santa Clara Street. Look at the international, amazing international cuisine. And Vegetarian House caters. So if you have an event coming up in the Bay Area, a business event, social event, you're getting married, and you want the food to be really, really good and acceptable to everyone, Vegetarian House, 100% vegan, organic, non-GMO, vegetarianhouse.us. And Vegetarian House is making possible the World Vegan Summit and Expo. You can register at worldvegansummit.com. Professor Gary Francione will be there. He's just looking over the schedule, and I see his presence, his extensive presence there. We see Saturday morning, 11 to 12:15, defining the abolitionist approach. Gary Francione with Anna Charlton. And then we have lunch, the importance of supporting vegan restaurants and businesses. And then after that, Professor Francione will conduct the first grassroots vegan activism workshop. Looks like 2:15 to 3:30 on Saturday. And then part two will be on Sunday from 4 p.m. to 5:30. Grassroots Vegan Activism Workshop Session 2 with Professor Gary Francione, the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school. His website is abolitionistapproach.com. The latest book is Eat Like You Care. And how are you doing today, Professor Francione?
I'm just dandy, Bob. I'm just absolutely dandy.
It's great to be dandy. Great to be dandy.
Yes, it is.
We strive for dandiness.
Bob, I believe that the issues of animal rights and human rights are inextricably intertwined. You can't really think about one without thinking about the other. And, you know, to see the truth of that and how, and really the simple connection, all you need to do is to consider that we object to speciesism. Why do we object to speciesism? Because we think it's wrong. Why do we think it's wrong? We think it's wrong because it's like racism and sexism and heterosexism and other forms of discrimination in which persons are excluded from the moral community for irrelevant reasons. You know, we use race to exclude people from the moral community. We use biological sex to exclude people from the moral community. We use sexual preference or sexual orientation to exclude people from the moral community. And it's wrong. And similarly, we use speciesism to exclude non-human persons, moral persons, from the moral community, and we treat them as things. And so when we say that it's wrong to engage in speciesism because speciesism is like racism, sexism, and heterosexism, we're making a statement about human rights. We're making a statement that we think that it's wrong to engage in these other forms of discrimination. And so, the animal rights position, the position that speciesism is wrong, rests explicitly on a foundation that rejects human discrimination in all of its forms. So you can't really, uncouple these things. If you're an animal rights advocate, what you believe leads you necessarily to a broad and progressive theory of human rights and to a rejection of all forms of discrimination. And what troubles me is the movement, the animal movement, has conscientiously avoided any involvement with human rights for the most part. Not, there have been exceptions. But the movement has stayed away from the human rights issues. And, now I understand why that is. I mean, there's an easy reason for that, and that is the animal movement is dominated by the large animal charities, the ones that you and I aren't happy with for lots of reasons. But yet there's yet another reason. Surprise, surprise. There's yet another reason to be unhappy with them, and that is because these organizations are not really promoting a social justice movement. They're charities looking to raise money and to get donations. And so just as they take an animal welfare position and they promote these single issue campaigns so that they can have a broad donor base, they try to be all things to all people so that they can maximize the size of their pool of potential donors, they also avoid the human rights issues because they realize that they're controversial, unfortunately, but that they're controversial issues. So they don't want to talk about human rights issues because they don't want to alienate people. Because again, that's something that decreases their donor pool. But what's really troubling to me, I mean, that I understand, that I get. I mean, I understand how animal organizations work. I've been studying them for decades now. I've been involved with them. I was involved with them for a long time. And I've been studying them for a long time. And I understand how they work. And I understand why they embrace welfare reform. I understand why they form partnerships with institutional users. I understand why they promote single issue campaigns. I mean, it's quite clear. They want to maximize donor revenue. And I understand why they avoid human rights issues for the same reason. But what troubles me is they not only avoid human rights issues, they not only avoid embracing a progressive theory of human rights, and they avoid rejecting human discrimination, even though the rejection of discrimination is inherently, logically built into the animal rights position. But what troubles me is they take an additional step. They use discrimination as a a tool to, again, increase revenues and to get those donors in. And, you know, and what this troubles me. This troubles me a lot. You know, since 1990, actually, I started in 1990 criticizing PETA for the sexism, which has become, I mean, it started off as pretty objectionable sexism. It's become hideous misogyny. I mean, the campaigns have gone from "I'd rather go naked than wear fur," which is objectionable all by itself. You know, all by itself, it's objectionable. But it's gone to these obscene and these, you know, these commercials that they try to run for the Super Bowl that they know the Super Bowl is going to reject, but they make them anyway. You know, of women masturbating with vegetables, or, you know, the yearly video that they put out of the woman who does the strip while, you know, Congress applauds. It's the State of the Union undress, telling donors what wonderful things Pete has done over the past year. And, you know, I've been criticizing that since 1990. When it first started, I said, this is a crazy idea. As long as we are characterizing and treating women like meat, we're going to continue to treat animals like meat. It's a bad idea. It's morally wrong. As a moral matter, it's wrong. As a practical matter, it'll never work. All it's going to do is just perpetuate sexism. It's never going to lead to the abolition of speciesism. But, you know, it's just really terrible to sort of look at, and again, I want to be real clear that I do not say that all animal advocates are engaged in discrimination, but I think some are. You know, we've seen recently in the past couple of weeks this Caparos, this campaign against the Hasidim in Brooklyn who kill the chickens as part of a ritual called Caparos, where they transfer their sins to the chicken and the chicken is killed. Is that a good idea? No, it's a terrible idea. Is what the Hasidim are doing, you know, is what they're doing a good idea? No. Is it a bad thing to do? Yes. But my point is, it is no different. What goes on in Crown Heights, Brooklyn, is no different from what's going on several blocks away in Brooklyn at a chicken slaughterhouse. And until we see that there is no difference and that the people who are eating chicken or consuming animal products, who are criticizing what the Hasidim are doing, are being inconsistent, and it's a really bad idea to be, you know, to focus on. You got a whole bunch of people who are doing the same thing and supporting the same thing, but let's focus on the Jews. Bad idea, really bad idea. We're seeing some unfortunate racism in connection with this guy who's going to be tried this week, I think on Thursday, Andre Robinson, who kicked the cat in Brooklyn. Now, is what he did a good thing? No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I'm really tired of animal people saying that I'm supporting Andre Robinson. No, I have stated right from the beginning. I mean, I realize when you have nothing of substance to say that mischaracterization is what you turn to. But I've never said that I support what he did. I've always said, I mean, how can you support kicking a cat? I mean, it was a horrible thing that the guy did. But my point is, people who want to put this guy in jail, and, you know, there's a lot of them out there. There's a real lynch mob, a real hate-mongering campaign against this guy. Now, what he did was wrong. But a lot of the people who are engaged in this hate-mongering, who are members of this lynch mob, aren't even vegan. Or they have family members who aren't vegan. Do they want to put their mothers in jail, their fathers in jail, their lovers in jail? I mean, it makes no sense to me. What this kid did was wrong. It was absolutely wrong. But does it make sense to put the guy in jail for something that everybody else in this society supports? Maybe it does to some people. I think it raises some serious questions, very serious questions. But what troubles me even more is beyond the inconsistency of how we treat these sorts of cases. You know, it's the same thing with Michael Vick, with Keisha Curtis, with these kids in Patterson who tortured a cat. Horrible stuff that they've done. But what they did is no worse than what everybody who's a non-vegan supports every single day. The fact that they pay somebody else to do it doesn't make it morally different.
Okay, we will continue. We need to take a break. We'll continue with Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter at GoVeganRadio, GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden on Facebook. And please register now for this once-in-a-lifetime event, the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Go to worldvegansummit.com. This is the time of the program where we have animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione. And don't encourage me, Gary. I am someone who would put all meat, dairy, fish, and egg eaters in jail, so it's probably best that I not get elected king or sheriff. But you know what I mean? It's like...
Well, look, Bob, I mean, look, I think we need, and you, I know you agree with me here, we need as a society to rethink animal ethics from the ground up. But we aren't going to be doing that as long as we're focusing on these single issue campaigns that more often than not really get us to sort of think negatively about individuals and about groups of people and not about the underlying activities. I mean, if you think about a lot of these single-issue campaigns, like we get upset with the Japanese about the dolphins at Taiji. We get upset about the Koreans and with the Chinese and the Koreans about eating dogs and cats and whatnot. We get upset about with the Hasidic Jews because of the Kaparos ritual. We get upset with Andre Robinson and Michael Vick and Keisha Curtis and the kids in Patterson because they do nasty things to companion animals. But, you know, in all of these cases, these campaigns, and again, I'm not saying that everybody who objects to these things is racist, xenophobic, or ethnocentric, but some of them are. And those voices end up really highlighting the racism and the discrimination of some animal people, and then this really gets generalized. The number of times I hear from people who are, you know, who I'm trying to get interested in the issue of animal rights, who will say to me, yeah, but, you know, I've seen some of the stuff that animal people have said about Michael Vick, and a lot of it is just virulently racist. Now, again, what Vick did bad? Yes. Was it any different from what non-vegans do? No. But, you know, not only do people not see, not only do some animal advocates not see that, but then they go on to sort of suggest that, you know, that this is a race, and they make it a race issue. There are animal people who do that. I had an absolutely bizarre exchange this week because people were calling this Andre Robinson. Someone posted a comment about him being pimpish. And I objected to that. And I said, you know, and they were talking about, another person was talking about, commenting that he lives in subsidized housing. And, you know, unlike a lot of white New Yorkers who have rent-controlled apartments and things like that, but in any event, but he lives in subsidized housing. And so there are comments being made about him being pimpish, his living in subsidized housing. I object to that, and people say, what's wrong with that? And it just sort of, it blows my mind that I actually have to have discussions with people in which we discuss whether, you know, calling a man of color pimpish. I mean, it's really upsetting, Bob. And I'm telling you, animal people have got to see the connection between human rights and animal rights. If you don't, you're doing it wrong. If you think that you can uncouple human rights and animal rights, you can't. And not only can you not uncouple them, but it's not doing the animals any good when these campaigns link up with anti-Semitism, with racism, with this. The number of times, I mean, Bob, the number of comments I've seen about the supposedly barbaric Japanese and Chinese and Koreans over issues going on over there, is what they're doing horrible? Absolutely. Absolutely. The dolphins of Taiji, what goes on with the dogs and cats in Korea and China, absolutely horrible. How about America? What goes on with the cows and the pigs and the chicken and the fish and all of those animals that we routinely exploit every single day?
What about the tailgater party, right, if we looked at it culturally, like?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's appalling. And so I really think, and one of the things that I'm going to focus on at the summit is linking, and you know, and I know you've really made efforts to try to make this a multicultural sort of event, and an event that is going to focus on human rights as well as animal rights in terms of making the vegan connection. And I know, and it's one of the reasons why I like you very much, Bob, is you're one of the few people out there who really sees the strong connection. And so, you know, and that's one of the things that I plan to talk about a lot.
We're running out of time. WorldVeganSummit.com. Register now. WorldVeganSummit.com. We'll continue the discussion next week. Thank you, Professor Francione.